Hello and welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this special episode, I'll be speaking to Daria Partus, managing partner at Grape, Robert Anger, director at First Communicate, Angela Richmond, founder at Red Fox Research, Ash Coleman-Smith, consultant CMO at Pathfinders, Joe Clegg, marketing lead at Callsign, Riaz Kanani, CEO and founder at Radiate B2B, and Mitchell Feldman, strategist at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, about the state of B2B marketing today. Lots of interviews, so are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. Just how far has B2B marketing come? How important is it to B2B businesses? And what can we do to grow its importance still further? It's time for a stock check, and I'm joined for that stock check by Daria Partus, who is managing partner of the London office of Grape. Daria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So what's your view? Where do you think we're at from a B2B marketing perspective?
Well, I think that we have definitely changed the ways we approach B2B marketing campaigns with the inception of social media. This is not new information, of course, but, you know, just 5 years ago, I think, or even, you know, 6-7 years ago, LinkedIn was just, you know, emerging as a platform. I mean, it was there and everybody had their profiles. Everybody kind of was registered. Many weren't registered. But I think nowadays LinkedIn is becoming so important for B2B marketeers that it's really changing the landscape of B2B marketing.
Let's explore that a bit then. So how is the landscape changing as a result of the I guess not the arrival of social media, but it's kind of embedding within the way that we do business?
Well, it's definitely allowing us to be more human in our communications, to think personal and to be more open, more outward looking, to be more, you know, embracing and inviting and engaging in our conversations that we have in the market. So whatever was happening before, you know, within closed industry events is now taking place on social media, primarily on LinkedIn, I would say, for B2B marketeers and for B2B businesses. So if you're not on LinkedIn just yet, you know, you have to make sure you at least have your profile registered and it's all fixed, you know, because there are many profiles that are registered, but they're not fit for purpose.
I'm interested in the whole point about human connection in communication. There's a debate that has been going on in B2B marketing forever about whether B2B marketing it should be focused more on the rational side of its communication as compared to the emotional side of what it does. And I think in B2C, that debate's been long had and over, and everyone agrees that emotion is the most important thing to focus on. In B2B, it feels like that kind of push and pull between rational and emotional is kind of still going on. Would you say that the growth of social media has meant a kind of reinforcement of the emotional elements of your messaging for B2B marketing?
Perhaps yes. You know, regardless of whether we are identified as a B2B business or a B2C business, ultimately people buy from people. And in B2B space, it's more so we make connections, we look up at opinion leaders, we look out for expertise, and we're more inclined to buy products and services from the people who we trust. And it's difficult to, you know, to build trust with a product or with a service. You build trust with the people who provide that service. And And so where social media comes into play, I think it's really allowed us to see quickly to see how our customers or how our peers, how other people react to what we have to say, how they react to our products and services and our expertise and our ideas. You know, you can see the number of likes and shares, right, of your post. And that's a very easy way to measure whether you have, you know, hit the chord.
And would you say that the kind of growth of social media has made B2B marketing overall more important to B2B businesses than it used to be?
Depends how you define marketing, you know, and depends on depends on the business that we are talking about. You know, for a startup business that's operating in B2B space, I think it's really, it's not just that I think, you know, research has shown and Y Incubator, for example, in California, that, you know, is an incubator of startups. They promote this idea that for startups, it's more important to focus on sales rather than marketing. Marketing comes into play, you know, as a support function once you've got your concept proven. Whereas for, you know, bigger businesses, when there is a resource for marketing and for a more sophisticated marketing practice, then of course marketing can play a, you know, can be a deal breaker in how they lead their business and how successful they are. There is more, you know, space for creativity. There is more space for professional services companies coming in and, you know, helping you out on that.
So, given the kind of the answer will be it is of different levels of importance for different types of business, I guess. What whatever that stage is, what can we as B2B marketers do to grow our importance in our organizations in coming years?
Okay, I think for both marketeers or PRs, it doesn't matter really what, you know, how we are defined within that organization. So I would say for all communications practitioners, it is important to understand that we have to stop being gatekeepers. We have to become coaches.
And okay.
You know, we have to train our leaders to help our leaders and enable our leaders to share their expertise and to talk about their products. We have to give them opportunities for that, but we can't do that for them.
So I'm kind of interested by what you say there. So for listeners who are thinking, oh, I need to switch to more of a coaching style of behavior going forward, how do they go about that? Where should they start?
Well, first of all, they should start building trust between them and their leaders. How do you do that? I mean, it really depends, you know, what kind of relationship you already have with your leaders. But you can start by interviewing them and understanding what's on their mind.
Right.
And then once you have that, you have to inspire them a little bit. You have to tell them that their views and opinions and expertise matter to the market. So one, that's the way to influence their ego. Once you've got their ego, you can have their time.
Okay.
And once you have their time, you can be creative about the ways and how to get them talking to you. So once you have them talking to you, you can bring your, you know, you can bring your dictaphone, or you can write down their thoughts. You can ask them to write an email to you, answer this question. Once you've got their thoughts, then you can help them formulate them better. You can help them to wrap them up, you know, as a little sweet.
Cool. So that's where you start, and you know, who knows where that relationship will then end.
Well, hopefully we'll stay in the professional realm, but it will definitely help you become their trusted advisor.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Brilliant. Daria Portis, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, B2B marketing director and consultant Robert Ainger. Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks for inviting me.
So as an outsider, what are your observations on B2B marketing as we go into this new decade?
So I am an outsider. I still very much have a foot in the camp of B2B marketing as I do some consultancy work in the area. But I have moved away from it. And I think it gives me an interesting perspective back into B2B marketing.
Okay.
But I'd have to say that when I reflect on it or when I look slightly from the outside, my opinion is that this is probably the most exciting time that there's ever been for B2B marketing, and that B2B marketers should really be seizing the opportunity and taking really a leadership role increasingly in their businesses. I think we will look back on the 2020s. Clearly, B2B marketing has been on a rapid journey and still quite a young discipline. But I think we'll see the 2020s as the time when it's just obvious that B2B businesses should be marketing-led, and that really B2B marketers are becoming increasingly the heroes of their business and worth their weight in gold in terms of leading and driving successful businesses.
Well, this is great to hear. Why now?
I think it comes mainly from increased sophistication and the dynamics of the market that we're selling into. There's no question that we are facing, you know, hyper competition in the market, but we're also selling to increasingly well-informed, super-informed customers. Mm. Under those circumstances, you know, the only business that is going to thrive and survive is one that is incredibly well-versed in the nuances of the segments that they're selling into, but also can provide that real tricky balancing act between the requirements of the market and the sort of innate strengths of the DNA of their business and be able to balance that. And I've always thought that that, underneath it all, is really the key sort of skill of a great marketer, being understand the business that they work for in great depth and being able to understand and get ahead of almost those subtle dynamics in the market. So really, I think we're going to get to the stage over the next couple of years when that, you know, basic business skill is going to be absolutely essential to any business that wants to survive and thrive. Now, some people still say, well, surely B2B businesses are not marketing led. Surely they're sales led or technology led. You know, we've heard this for years. But I'm sorry, I just think that that's just not the case anymore. It's basic business common sense that the marketing discipline of understanding the requirements of the market and matching your proposition and presenting your proposition in all its glory in the right way is absolutely key to success in business.
So I can see the logic, and obviously we're both a bit biased because of our B2B marketing backgrounds, but are you actually seeing it happen?
The answer to that is yes, and I think actually we've seen this happening for quite a while. Now, you'll see it more, I think, in smaller businesses than you would see it in sort of big corporates.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just, and the nature of smaller businesses. You know, they need to be more sort of flexible and the resource needs to be used in a slightly different way.
Sure.
But I think you'll also see that the conversation in larger corporate businesses has started to change as well. It was only a few years ago when it seemed like, you know, something fairly radical to talk about sales and marketing alignment. Nobody would say that was anything other than, you know, absolutely obvious comment now.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing far more businesses, you know, talk about, you know, not a marketing plan or a sales plan, but one business plan for the business. Surely that's a move in the right direction. But I don't think it's gone far enough, I've got to say. You know, I do see more people recruiting, if you like, vice presidents of sales and marketing, or people who are actually driving a marketing engagement engine for their business. I do see that. Mm. But I think there needs to be still far more creativity in organizational design so that actually those core marketing skills are very much at the heart of a successful business.
And would you say that's what's holding us back?
You mean organizational design?
Yeah.
I think so. I think there's a number of things that are probably slowing us down on this move.
Okay.
I think, firstly, there still is not a great understanding of what marketing is and what marketing should be delivering at the very top level of many B2B businesses. You know, that seems strange, but I don't see enough, you know, people with strong marketing backgrounds probably taking up the CEO position now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably, you know, a little bit of a point of resistance. I also think that the journey we've been on, where marketing in many B2B businesses was seen as a sort of support function, I don't think marketing has, if you like, won its spurs all the time and actually proved the point. So I think there's more that perhaps we need to do to re-educate and sell that in. I wonder as well, on a slightly challenging point, if there's enough B2B marketers who are absolutely stepping up to the plate. Mm. You know, I think that the role is an exciting one if you're leading the business and driving the business forward. But you're, boy, are you sticking your head above the parapet? You know, this is absolutely, you know, sort of make or break time if you take up those sorts of roles. Mm. Very exciting, very challenging, though, at the same time.
And hence very risky.
Oh, very risky. But again, you know, actually, with very solid training and very solid background, there's the opportunity to de-risk, but also prove the point. You know, if we truly believe that marketing can deliver, you know, these sorts of rewards for a B2B business, then actually, is that risky? You know, I think that actually the point will be proven. And obviously, executing and delivering is going to be essential, as it is for anybody at any point of their career. And the stakes are high. But now is an opportunity, I think, for people to really prove that point and to take marketing forward in B2B businesses.
Robert, thank you very much. Next, I'm joined by the founder of Red Fox Research, Angela Richmond. Angela, thanks for coming along on the podcast.
Thank you.
So, big general question. Just how far has B2B marketing come, Angela? What's the answer?
I think it's gone in two different directions, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think we've got the traditional B2B companies, which are, you know, they've really come from a sales culture rather than a marketing culture. And I think it's been quite difficult for some of those businesses to pull themselves into doing marketing rather than sales.
Right.
They've got great relationships with their customers. They've got a very sales-oriented culture. But they find it harder, I think, to focus on potential customers rather than the ones they've got. And the problem with that is that it can become too insular and self-fulfilling, you know, and suddenly you've got a business where they believe all their customers are happy, but in fact they're not delivering something that the wider market wants. Then on the other hand, you've got the disruptors who tend to be really good at marketing. Often they've got remote selling models, they've got subscription-based models, they might be, you know, software as a service. They don't have any salespeople a lot of the time. They're all about marketing. So it has kind of gone in two quite different directions.
And let's perhaps look at each one. So if we look at the businesses that kind of have gone on that journey from or started out in sales and are trying to kind of break free of the gravity of sales and take a more marketing led approach, what sort of things should they be looking to do to help kind of gravitate more into the space of B2B marketing?
Yeah, I think they have to get out there and do research with potential customers that buy from their competitors, that might not yet know that they have a need for this product. Because without understanding the pain points of those sort of people, without understanding the barriers to purchase, they can't design marketing campaigns which will resonate with them. Otherwise, they're just creating marketing campaigns that preach to the converted. You know, they have a bunch of customers that love them already.
So I sense, given that I said at the top of this, you're from Red Fox Research, there'll be some bias in the answer to this question in terms of going for research. What would you say, though, to the kind of sales pushback with the, well, hang on a minute, we already speak to our customers. We do that every day. Why do we need to research them?
Well, you know, people don't always give an honest answer to salespeople. You know, even if they go and ask, why didn't we win the business? You know, sometimes we do win-loss research. Mm. And people will tell us quite different reasons why they didn't give that piece of business to that company as they'll have told the salespeople.
Mm.
You know, the salespeople will often come back and say it was the price.
Yeah.
You know, because it's an easy excuse. But we might get a more nuanced answer.
And maybe a more representative one as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm looking then to the disruptor group, so they're good at marketing or already, can they sit back on their laurels?
No, of course not. No. I mean, I think that with those businesses, sometimes the best marketing has come from those people that are maybe a little bit more novice at it, who are more used to consuming marketing as consumers. There was a lovely campaign actually last year for an agritech company called Hectare,
right?
Who were launching a platform to buy and sell livestock on. You know, so you know it's quite sort of obscure in many ways. But what they did was they did a campaign called Tudder, which was basically Tinder for cows. So you could look at the profiles of these livestock online. And the nice thing about it was that it had an emotional resonance, you know, and I do think that quite a lot of B2B marketing, people design campaigns that market to businesses, but businesses don't buy, people do.
And that's frequently, I think in the B2C side, that's kind of well understood.
Mm-hmm.
But on the B2B side, there's perhaps more of an upward struggle there.
Yeah. And there's sometimes, you know, a sort of feeling that we want the vanity billboard outside Heathrow Airport, you know, just because it makes us feel good.
Mm.
But it doesn't really say anything to people, does it?
No. And certainly it doesn't have the impact that that perhaps it properly could. So if we look at that disruptor group, what can the B2B marketers in those organisations do to grow the importance of their profession within the business more?
Yeah, I think that I think one of the things that they can do is help the business understand the value of marketing. And, you know, sometimes marketing is seen as this sort of smoke and mirrors discipline. One of the things that's helping them is that marketing is actually becoming a much more database science.
Right.
And I don't say that just as a researcher. I think there's a lot of data within businesses that can be used.
Mm.
The sales data, the, you know, click-throughs, any of that, you know, first-party data. And that can help show the value of marketing. You know, if they're doing A-B testing, you know, they're looking at the success of different campaigns and they can put the hard numbers on the table that say this campaign was a success.
Mm. And of course, they mustn't forget either the point that you would be advising to the sales-oriented businesses of also doing some proper research on the customer as well.
Yeah, I think you need to understand the different personas that you're selling to, because, you know, you're likely going to have to get your argument across to a finance director, maybe an HR director, maybe a department manager, you know, whoever's buying your product, whoever's signing the final check.
Mm.
And you need to understand who those different personas are and what drives them.
Mm.
And they will be driven by different things. So your arguments have got to be different at different points in time.
Do you take the same approach to researching B2B organisations as B2C? Or are there quite significant differences?
I think in terms of what we ask and how we ask it, it's very similar. The methodologies are different.
Mm.
It's pretty difficult to get, you know, 8 IT directors together in a room and do a focus group. So it tends to be a one-to-one conversation.
Right.
It's hard to have conversations about cybersecurity with other people present.
Yeah.
So we have to bear in mind that people will be a little bit guarded in the conversations at first. So in terms of qualitative research, what we do is we we kind of build up our understanding. And as we start to understand what's going on, we can then test some of those ideas. So I think people want it to be more of a conversation in a business environment. They don't want to just have a load of questions thrown out to them and an answer.
Angela Richmond, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, managing partner at Pathfinders, Ash Coleman-Smith. Ash, thanks for coming along on the podcast today.
Pleasure. Very good to be here.
So just how far has B2B marketing come, Ash?
Well, I've been in the world of marketing for a while, 20 plus years. So I guess I've got a pretty good vision on that. It's interesting, isn't it? I've noticed recently that I think B2B marketers have got over their slight sense of inferiority. I've seen some fantastic awards entries and the level of quality rising and rising. But that's not to say that there wasn't great B2B marketing, several decades ago. Does what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
IBM and you don't get fired for that you can wind back a long way, probably even before I joined the industry. And there was great work going on.
Yeah.
I think it was just that it never had that creative sex appeal that good old consumer marketing has. Where is it now? I'm slightly worried for it, I think, at the moment, because of the takeover of rational, often led by digital, social thinking in the world of marketing generally, but particularly in B2B. And I've noticed it. One of my clients at the moment is a startup, and I fell into the very trap that is thinking too much about the plumbing and not enough about the real problems.
Okay.
And that trap, which I see at the moment for B2B, is it's great to look at data. It's great to think about some of the brilliant tools out there that allow you to target audiences. And you can start to think about pay-per-click advertising, all the other tactics. But it drives you into thinking incrementally.
Okay.
And for me, that challenge is coming because a lot of businesses at the moment are applying an ROI on B2B marketing of sales. I loved the quote recently from, I can't remember who it was, but it was a very successful, it might have been Kevin Tweedy, who was the now ex-global marketing director of Unilever, who said, building awareness doesn't sound much like a strategy, but it is. But the problem with that, as we all know, is that if you started with a deep analysis of B2B target markets from the sort of data starting point that's concerning me, you don't end up in a place that says, let's do something big, brave and creative and go out there and really make a noise. And there will be some wastage, but we'll be seriously positioned. Because for me, the danger at the moment is that everyone driven by that specific data, the very particular tactics, all ends up in one very crowded place.
Yeah.
All in a corner of a room with the rest of the room empty. That's a great opportunity for those that are brave enough to step out and therefore differentiate.
It's interesting, though, because so you kind of started off by talking about how, I guess, B2B marketing has kind of grown in confidence over recent years. And then you have this trend of kind of really wanting to measure every single tactic that you talk about through digital. And I kind of wonder whether they're related. Are we more confident because now actually we can prove the value of every single tactic that we have?
I think I think the answer is yes. And it was always a challenge as someone who had spent a long time in public relations, trying to justify and measure public relations, still a challenge in many ways. But I think I go back to my proposition, which is there's a lot of very, very confident people all huddled in a corner together.
Yeah.
And the real confidence that making a real impact, really standing out as a brand, really achieving some of the success that you want to, means being confident in a different way.
Yeah.
To step away from that. And I think, you know, the doing something counterintuitive, you know, I can't remember where the quote comes from, but when it may have been the big global investor, his name will come back to me, but he tended to when he watched the market, always invest in parts of the market that the rest of the market wasn't investing in.
Right.
And you know, there's a similar psychology here. If I see everybody else racing into that corner,
yeah,
I'm sort of asking, what's the opportunity left now to do something really different and interesting and be brave and confident in a different way? So if I have a concern,
it's that. So how do we kind of try and override that concern? How can we move from the corner to the center of the room?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that it's absolutely right to map out very specifically and, you know, driven by KPIs, as we've just said, that are very important, you know, what you think a good plan looks like. And then ask the question, have I just developed that plan because it's easy to sell in? Have I just developed that plan because it's safe in terms of my own position as a marketing person internally, and it's entirely justifiable? Because there may well be solutions, creative solutions, that when you step back and look at that plan, will be much harder to sell in and will, you know, expose you personally to a level of risk. But there's a different type of what I'd call rigor that's required in order to elevate a campaign into a place where it's really delivering. And that rigor comes from not just looking at the numbers and the specifics and always having an ROI, but being confident enough to know that you understand your target audience and your target market, as well as, or not, if not better than, the sales team, the board, and understand the drivers, the emotional drivers, the right side brain stuff that's driving them. Because if you can do that, then your confidence that you've got a platform for something really creative and impactful, which is much harder to sell in,
it can
result in something special.
Yeah, because you're kind of asking people to take a bit of a risk here, which isn't necessarily a comfortable thing for them to do.
No.
How can you help give our listeners a bit of comfort that this is going to work for them?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I can cite plenty of marketing people who've taken those sorts of risks over the years. There's one of my clients a long time ago, Simon Esberger, who is the marketing director at what was called BT Genie before it then transformed and became O2.
Yeah.
Now, I watched Simon, who's a client of mine when he was at Cadbury, make some very brave decisions. And I saw some of them go right, and I saw some of them go wrong. But I tell you what, he's one of the best marketeers I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
And if we're not all doing that, we're not moving things forward. You know, do you want to get to the end of a period of time at a particular employer or at the end of your career and look back and go, I did lots of safe stuff, you know, it nothing wrong with it, or were you really out there making the impact that you know you could make? So I know where I am in that one, and I'm not shuffled in a corner with everyone else, because that immediately makes me nervous. But there is risk, and you know, I've seen people take those risks and have some real issues.
Yeah.
And sure, I had my battles as a CMO with the board, and you know, towards the end of my time at Brian Cave, Leighton Paisner, with a board that then was suddenly made up with a lot of new members of a merged business from America with very different
Things.
And of course the different levels of conservative risk averse sort of driving going on. So, you know, almost having to take more and more risk in order to achieve what you want to achieve. But here's the thing: if you really want to be successful as a marketing person, you've got to have an agenda. If you don't have an agenda, you'll be driven by everyone else's, and you really won't make the impact you want to have. So, you know what you want to achieve, know how you want to achieve it, put some markers out there and go for it. And everyone will know that you're the person on a mission, and you'll succeed. Otherwise, I would suggest there's more dangers in being, you know, pushed along by the tide and ending up somewhere you really don't want to end up.
Ash Coleman-Smith, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Next up, marketing lead at Callsign, Joe Clegg. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just how far has B2B marketing come then?
I think in leaps and bounds, if I'm honest. You know, I think I started, from when I started even to now, you know, I'm still quite young as a marketer, but I think the more I've seen data being applied and gathered within organisations, I think what it's allowed for is to get a better understanding of the customer, to be able to have more informed conversations with the wider business, and to be able to actually draw on, I suppose, experiences and not just sort of say, oh, this campaign was a failure because it didn't generate, you know, as many leads as we wanted, or didn't sort of turn those into customers. But actually, there was aspects of that that worked really well. You know, it could just be that some of the tactics were correct, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's allowed us to adapt and evolve at a much faster rate to create better targeted campaigns, but also allow us to actually talk to the business at the right level, using their data, their knowledge, our data and knowledge to talk on their levels.
So you're kind of portraying a profession that has taken the experience that it's built up over the years and is now prepared to do a bit more with it in order to be better, both in terms of the marketing it does to its customer and the marketing it does internally. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, being able to have, you know, you often hear in the conversations, being able to have informed discussions, to push back with data and all this sort of stuff. And I think not being able to do that at times does make it difficult. And it's almost puts it in that notion of sort of finger in the air. And it's like, well, no, actually, from a lot of experience, I believe this is right. Mm. And it probably is right. Mm. But it's hard for someone who is in a different area of the business to garner that trust just off sort of, In fact, it has to be a trust of that individual to go with that strategy and that plan. Mm. But sometimes when you can present that data back and go, no, this is the reason why we're doing it, here's some examples, you know, et cetera, et cetera, I think it helps build those relationships a little quicker, I suppose, is what it is.
Yeah. Would you say there's kind of a couple of key things that have happened that have enabled B2B marketers to get themselves into this position?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably one of them is, you know, being able to, I think the use of this data, for example, and access to data has allowed us to enter sort of areas of the business and have some conversations with them that might not have allowed us to do so before. You know, one of those I can think about is probably product. You know, product is one of those where it's like, okay, well, let's look at what the customer needs and build that back in, right, and then deliver it back. But if you've got data saying how that product's being used and aspects of that product, you can actually start having more informed discussions and go, they're not using this. You know, let's look at how we can evolve it. If we think it's needed, how can we evolve this? Mm. And it's actually allowed us to enter some of those, I think, conversations with a little bit more, I don't want to say the word respect, but a little bit more of an authority and understanding to be able to be in that room and feedback.
Do you think we make enough use of that data access?
I think it's difficult on that one, because I think sometimes you can have data saturation. And I think one of the things that marketers struggle with at the moment is we've got so much, how can we put it to good use? Mm. You know, and I think it's having that understanding of going, well, what is it we're wanting to achieve? And sort of segmenting using that data in the appropriate manner. And, you know, a lot of people talk about taking, you know, these massive sort of dashboards and loads of data into boardrooms and all these discussions. A lot of that isn't needed. People don't really need to know that piece of information. That's at the tactic level, which would help us as a marketer improve our campaigns. It's not necessarily the information that's going to go, this is going to help with the bottom line. You know, this is going to help sort of green brand exposure and all that sort of piece. That's what they care about.
Okay.
I think you might get some board members who want to go, do we have lots of visitors to the website? But I think that comes from a very generic, I feel like I should ask this question, not necessarily, I need to know this information to help make strategic decisions. And I think as marketers, we need to pick and choose how we apply that data and how we approach it as well.
So how can we do better at it? What can we do to kind of grow B2B marketing's importance within a business going forward?
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky in that at Callsign, when I joined, there was three of us in the marketing department. There wasn't much of a brand presence. In fact, there wasn't really any marketing as much going on, really. And I think having that opportunity to be part of that growth and actually start to have those communications with all areas of the business and actually go, this is why we're here, and this is why, you know, we want to be involved in this aspect, whether it is sort of the account management team and the onboarding and support that goes around that, the product development, and even just the, you know, generic growth of the brand and working with the board on that level. I think what it has really allowed me to do is actually understand how those sort of areas of the business can benefit from marketing, but how marketing can lend its advice and help and support to those. And I think what we can do is actually begin to have more open and transparent conversations where we listen to the business and relay back in with helpful advice, rather than sort of coming in as the brand, you know, custodians and going, look, you know, this is the onboarding and support levels and you're getting this completely wrong. It's like, well, no, why are we getting this wrong? And I always, it's a really simple thing, but I always go back to this notion of we're helping them with the documentation within the organization so that it's eligible, you know, easy to read, it's still, and it's got the brand consistency. Nobody was really bothered, but when we started to have these conversations with, you know, areas of the business, it wasn't enough colors in the brand. And so they weren't wanting to write this documentation. They weren't wanting to get involved. And it made me realize how important the brand is internally as well as externally, you know, and removing a lot of that. Sometimes we create a brand that has internal friction within it that actually creates barriers and blockers. And I think we took some of those out, just going, okay, well, let's open up the color palette a bit more. We did that and we haven't had any kickback. And now those individuals have become advocates of the brand because we've helped them come on board with it and actually develop it with us.
You've kind of almost taken their objections away and now they kind of feel part of the brand themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, any organization, you know, should be behind the brand and part of that brand, you know, and it's marketing's job to really help build that and grow that. But if marketing isn't listening to the rest of the business and engaging with it, it's not necessarily going to happen, I don't think.
Joe Clegg, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great.
Next up, I'm joined by Riaz Kanani, who is CEO and founder of Radiate B2B. Riaz, welcome to the podcast.
Really good to be here.
So what's your view? Just how far has B2B marketing come then?
Well, I mean, I look back, rather astonishingly, I've been in the space for 21 years. And I look back at the beginning of that period and, you know, two or three years after that, we were building Silverpop's B2B platform, and you know, the world was basically leads. It was pretty simplistic, really. And there was very, you know, it was very difficult to coordinate and manage these campaigns and test. But on the other hand, the great marketing teams in those days were also very strategic, and knew how to tie these different things together. But if you look then, you know, obviously the launch of marketing automation and as those platforms came online, we were able to be much more coordinated. We were able to collect a lot more data, and therefore we were able to test some more, which obviously then led to much better performance. And in theory, and it did certainly for a bunch of years at least, drive greater quality leads to the sales team. And the frameworks that got developed, I think, were brilliant for the time. I look back today, or in fact, you know, two or three years ago, and it's why I started Radiate. And actually, I see some of the same things that we used to see 15, 20 years ago, which is, you know, the difference between an SQL and an MQL is pretty similar to what it was like between a lead and an opportunity back in the old days,
right?
And, you know, today there's much more, many more channels and an overload of content.
So I guess the picture that you're painting is that maybe sort of 20 years ago, it was strategy that was focused on trying to tie all of these disparate things together. Over the last 20 years, technology has played more of a role.
Yeah, completely. And actually, I think in some ways to marketing's detriment, a lot of conversations are in the weeds, shall we say, of, you know, testing this channel and tweaking this and tweaking that, which is all important, but also the strategic side is just as important, if not more important, really.
And yet that's countered almost by the growing complexity of the environment that you refer to, which that's perhaps right. Makes marketing a bit more important.
Yeah, I think so completely. The world we live in today is one that continues to change significantly and dramatically, not least you know, in the UK with all the Brexit stuff that's happening. And so the need for marketing to step up and deliver that strategy is important. And actually, I think that's one of the reasons why ABM can be useful to that change.
So we'll come to that. But yeah, but I guess in terms of that taking stock point, I'm kind of inferring that you're saying that actually, well, the position of B2B marketing hasn't really much changed in terms of its influence over the last 20 years. It's risen and fallen and back where it was.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are definitely companies that are doing an amazing job on B2B marketing. But if you look across B2B marketing as a whole, I would say yes. I think there's still plenty of room for us to do even better.
Okay, so that obviously begs the question how, and I'm pretty sure ABM will come into the answer. But let's go for it. What can we do to grow the importance of B2B marketing still further?
Yeah, for me, there's two big changes going on inside B2B marketing. One is the avalanche of content. And so how do we get over that and cut through to the buyer who is, you know, facing that avalanche? And, you know, obviously, unsurprisingly, in my view, ABM and more targeted and more relevant content is part of that puzzle. On the other side, actually on the sales side rather than the marketing side, salespeople are finding it much harder to connect and build relationships at the beginning of the pipeline. And marketing there, I think that's where marketing's influence is actually growing, and ABM obviously is contributing to that by marketing's greater involvement in that part of the pipeline.
So does that mean your advice for the marketers listening to this would be to make sure they're up to speed on account-based marketing and driving that forward within their businesses?
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's an assumption that the strategy is meant for the business. There's, you know, it's not meant for all B2B businesses. But I do think that where you've got sales teams in place and marketing teams, that they're going to have to work better together to cut through all the noise that is in the marketplace today.
And you're kind of bound to say that all of this because of your ABM credentials. What about the world outside of ABM? Are there other kind of marketing qualities or skills that we should really look to make ourselves fit for the 2020s?
Yeah, I mean, there's always new opportunities. You know, maybe that's augmented reality, maybe that's virtual reality. There's always different channels, different mediums, different things that are happening, and marketers always need to look to what's next to make sure that they can take advantage.
So stay ahead.
Stay ahead, yeah.
Riaz Kanani, CEO and founder of Radiate B2B, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Mitchell Feldman, who is marketer at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Mitchell, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, good morning.
So just how far has B2B marketing come in your eyes?
Wow. It's been, it's transformed, right? You know, everyone is talking about digital transformation. I think nothing is more pervasive than when it comes to marketing. I remember when I started my career in marketing, I worked for an advertising company and we used to sell to local businesses. And actually, what we used to do is we used to get the daily papers delivered from, I don't know, Dover. And we used to wade through the papers looking for adverts for people with pictures of themselves in the adverts because we knew they were the easiest ones to sell to. We used to phone them and then used to have to drive to them. And it was quite laborious. And I'm sure many people listening to this have been down that similar journey. And then obviously things like email marketing and the internet came along. But I think it's really changed in the last 3 to 5 years, probably even shorter than that. Maybe I would say maybe 2 to 3 years, where I think the landscape has changed. It's something that I refer to often as digital warfare.
Right.
That actually the marketing has changed where it's not just the role of the marketing team. It's the role of the whole business. But there are some amazing tools out there to automate a lot of the marketing. But for me, and something that I'm really passionate about is actually making the sellers become marketers. Because naturally, these people are chameleons. They know how to work a room. And what they need to understand is in the modern battlefield of marketing, they need to take ownership of their own pipeline, their own responsibility of demand generation. And we use things to great effect, such as LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is full of people trying to sell you stuff. But if it's done really well and respectful of the people that you're talking to, you can achieve some amazing results. I have created over the years a large network of what I call digital relationships. These are people that I've interacted with online, given my opinion to, shared views, whether they're complimentary or not, not all the time. But I'm creating relationships with those people. And actually, I can call upon those people outside of digital because I forged that relationship with them.
Okay.
So for me, marketing has changed because it's now personal. It's more personal than it's ever been. The ability to be able to find out stuff about people before you've even interacted with them. I remember years ago when I was selling, I remember one of the pieces of advice I was given is when you walk into the office, the first thing is look around. Can you see pictures of horses or family or trophies?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're the common denominators that will help you break the ice when you're talking to the customer.
Sure.
You don't have the ability to walk into everybody's office, but you've got those same signals online.
Online.
So I know what football team they're supporting. I know that they love being with their family. I know that they like skiing. I know that they're opposed to Brexit. And so if I'm smart and invest time in understanding my audience, I can start building my own success by interacting with them in a respectful way, but to great, great effect. And you've seen it. You know, I say to people, I often speak to people about LinkedIn. They're like, well, I'd send a connection request to someone that no one ever accepts. It's because you're too early in the conversation. You know, I'm much, much more inclined to connect with someone on LinkedIn if they've interacted with my content. They've stroked my ego by liking my content or interacting before they've connected with me. And once they can connect with me, I have that connection with them already. I'm much more likely to connect with them. And I will do. Typically, if they are unseasoned, they will then follow me up with an instant email saying, I'd love to chat to you about your business.
Yeah.
For me, that's a red flag to instantly disconnect because I like peers who I have respect for and I've got quite a high quality network. So connect with the people, interact with their content, have a view, have your own view. Don't follow the masses. And by doing that, you build out your network and allow not only that network, once you've built out that quality network, we all know how the algorithms work. If we then start posting great content, those people will interact with it and share it with their network, who we will assume is of similar ilk. And for me, that's a brand new landscape. That's nothing that we've seen in the last, certainly in the last 10 years, certainly not before then. So really upskilling people to become social sellers is really what I would ask companies to double down on. For many reasons, not just of the effectiveness, but the cost. We're talking about reaching out to your ideal network at a very, very low cost. At worst, it's going to cost you the cost of a premium LinkedIn account. But that's how marketing has changed.
And so I guess what you're describing is marketers behaving even more than perhaps in the past as coaches of the wider business.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. We spend our time within the marketing team, or there is a consideration within the marketing team to enable our sellers to become modern. Because they can't rely on leads coming through our website or just through partners. Actually, they need to make their own success. And you can look for signals online. You know, following hashtags online of someone who's typed in the word storage, you know, that's a potential audience member that you can talk to. And unevasively.
And that's how I grow the importance of marketing, perhaps, in the wider business.
Totally. And one thing that we've seen is it is doomed for failure if it's not supported from the top down. You know, we would encourage the executives of the business to behave like they want the rest of the company to behave. I mentioned it before, become a social enterprise. Make that the DNA of the business. Look through the lens of whatever we're doing. can we share that with our customers? Would that be of interest? You know, I was looking the other week, there's the forthcoming launch of the new film Top Gun.
Right.
And, you know, I'm an 80s child. Yeah, it's right. I have a romantic connection to the film. And it was really exciting for me. But then what they cleverly did was, is 2 or 3 days after they released the trailer, they released the making of Top Gun before the film came out. So how's the experience, the G-force? Mm. And I was thinking, do you know what? That would be a great asset for us to have as HPE. Everyone shows these trophy video case studies of what great looks like. I want to see the guy sweating, who can't get to sleep, because that's what my audience, looking at personas, that's what my CIO or CTO wants to see. What's this look like if I pull back the veneer? Mm. So using that material to talk to that audience and connect with them is so, so important. And everyone can do that. You know, we live in a world where the Blair Witch Project style videos where you can just quickly film something. As long as you're respectful for the brand guidelines, do it.
Because I was going to actually come to something around the brand guidelines, and actually a kind of more general concern I sometimes hear from business leaders, which is a reluctance to embrace this new world because of their concerns about the risk to their business in doing so. And there's kind of almost a natural desire amongst some to try to control it, and an angst that the control that they have is limited. Do you have advice for those leaders beyond the just embrace it? You know, how can I feel more comfortable about this?
Yeah, and it's a very fair point. I guess it comes down to education. It does come down to education. How many people out there are actually spending time for half an hour for your CMO or whoever your lead is for marketing to say, this is our vision, this is our tone of voice, this is how we speak to the audience, these are the things that we do and we don't do, and make it very snackable, very consumable for the non-marketing folk to understand, and show them what the benefits are in doing that. But you need to give people, you need to trust your people. If you can swap bureaucracy for trust, it's a great currency that you will thrive in.
Okay.
But to do that respectfully, to have, again, procedures in place when you do spot content that doesn't align to brand or offends the brand, perhaps you need to have controls in place like that. But it's education and leading by example. Like with all these things we've seen in technology for years and years, where you try and stop someone from doing something, they'll find a way to do it. So I remember maybe 15, 20 years ago, everyone wanted to lock down all of the computers and the web traffic that people could use outside. What did they do? Everyone turned to their mobiles and did everything on their mobiles they couldn't do on their work.
Did it anyway,
right? So empower them and trust them, but give them the framework before you do that.
Mitchell Feldman, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my brilliant guests, Daria Partus, Robert Ainger, Angela Richmond, Ash Coleman-Smith, Joe Clegg, Riaz Kanani, and Mitchell Feldman. And thanks to you for listening. Please do let us know what you've thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review, or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And hey, if you've got something interesting, practical and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no sales pitches, product demos, creds presentations or theoretical nonsense, please. Not for these cans. You might also think to join the Business Marketing Club for events, mentoring and thought leadership for the B2B marketing community. It costs just £100 to sign up for a year. So what's stopping you? I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks very much for listening.